reconvene. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good afternoon. We're delighted to welcome the Mid-State Technical College students and Suzanne Rath, an instructor, attended the 2007 Teachers Institute, which was held last week. Would the students from Mid-State Technical College please stand so we can greet them? Is Ms. Roth here? Rathy? Yes, good. It's good seeing you. You may be seated. We also have with us seven American Field Exchange, AFS students. Would they stand, please? Well, we're delighted to see you. You may be seated. We had the opportunity, Justice Prosser and I, to meet the American Field Exchange students several weeks ago here. They are from Ghana, Germany, Indonesia, and Turkey. And this is their second visit to the court, but the first for an oral argument. And, they are attending schools in Washington County of Wisconsin, and their hosts are Karen and Bruce Barnes. So we're delighted to have you back with us. The Deputy Marshal has summaries of the case you're about to hear. It's good to know something about the case if you're going to listen to it. If you'd like a summary, just raise your hand and he'll give you one. Okay. But now that we've introduced the students...
Oh, I've started to
You're
going to
raise your hand.
No,
okay.
I didn't.
Now that we've...
Should we come back out?
Now that we've met the students, let me introduce the court to you. Have the students, did the students appear at noon?
Some of them,
yeah.
Yes,
good.
Indeed.
I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Anne Walsh Bradley. She was on duty today to meet with the students at noon to describe the procedures.
I had some good questions, too, Chief.
Good. Okay, we can hear them later. After, if we don't have good questions, they can answer.
Hopefully
questions.
I have some good answers. I don't know.
She met with the students. They talked the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues of any of the cases we are hearing. And seated next to Justice Bradley is Justice David Prosser. Usually, Justice Lewis Butler sits in what is now an empty chair, but he is out of Madison today on a family medical issue. To my immediate right, I should say, he will be participating in this case and will listen to the oral arguments, and he has read the briefs and has done research on the case. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox, and to his right, Justice Patrick Crooks, and on the far right, Justice Patience Rogensack. With those introductions made, I will call our final case today, 06-AP-1143-AC, Robert Zellner versus Cedarburg School District. Arguing on behalf of Mr. Zellner is Gina L. Jonan of WEAC. Ms. Jonan.
May it please the court. My name is Gina Jonan, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Mr. Bob Zellner, who is seated to my right. The open records law is premised on the belief that government functions best when it is open and honest. But open and honest government must be balanced against a government's responsibility to protect the rights and reputations of its citizens. Here, the government did not act openly or honestly. It created misleading and inflammatory records for the purpose of damaging Mr. Zellner's reputation and bolstering its litigation position in the arbitration hearing.
Does misleading or damaging records have anything to do with the issue of standing?
Your Honor, no, it does not.
Does misleading or damaging records have anything to do with the statutory interpretation issue with regard to 19.32.2?
No, Your Honor, it does not. Standing merely refers to the ability to bring a claim.
Okay, I'm focused, I'll get back to standing, but I'm focusing on the misleading and damaging. And I could give you a laundry list and get negative answers, but let me get to the bottom of the list and say, where in the analysis, if at all, does the assertion that information is misleading and damaging come into play?
That comes into play in the balancing test, Your Honor.
Your opposing counsel asserts that the case, the Jensen case, would state otherwise.
Yes, Your Honor. However, Jensen was decided before this court decided Linsmeyer. And in Linsmeyer, the court instructed that if there is raw misleading data, that would weigh against disclosure under the balancing test.
As I recall Linsmeyer, and I might be incorrect, but that it wasn't so much, I might be incorrect on this, that it wasn't raw damaging information as it was information with regard to, that might point at the identity of an informant, which came under an exception.
Well, it was discussing, it talked about police reports, Your Honor, and it talked about
okay.
how police reports are have hearsay and unreliable statements. And that's exactly what we have here, is we have records that are unreliable.
Then what are you supposed to do with that?
That would weigh against disclosure in this case, Your Honor, that the records are too damaging to Mr. Zellner's reputational interest because they are misleading versus the minimal public value that the records offer. The records do not offer any insight into the board's decision to terminate Mr. Zellner in this case because the board didn't have the records at the time it made that decision to terminate him. So it was not a factor in the board's decision. Also, the records are not indicative of Mr. Zellner's conduct in this case because Mr. Zellner was terminated for performing one Google search for the word blonde that brought up adult images.
Ms. Jonan, who makes the determination as to whether or not these records are indeed misleading or damaging? Is that something we're supposed to do?
It is. The standard of review is de novo in this case, so the court may consider that in the balancing test.
Well, isn't that a finding of fact?
It is a finding of fact, Your Honor, but that finding of fact was found in the arbitrator's award and in the expert deposition in this case, and the court can consider those on its de novo review.
But no court has found that these records are misleading or damaging, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. However, the great weight of the evidence shows that these records are misleading. If you look at the district's own witness, the forensic computer expert, he testified that he retrieved the raw data from the unallocated space of the district's hard drive. He could not show that any of these records were intentionally accessed by Mr. Zellner.
And let me interrupt you, if I might, again for a minute. Has the arbitration award been approved by a court?
No, Your Honor, it has not. That is pending in the circuit court right now. However, this court...
Can we take judicial notice of the adjudicative facts of the arbitrator's award?
Yes, you can, Your Honor.
Under what authority?
The Court of Appeals said that it could take judicial notice of the arbitrator's award. And, in fact, courts do give great deference to arbitrators' findings because it's very difficult to vacate an arbitrator's award.
But that's when the arbitration is sought to be enforced, correct?
That's correct.
Do you have any precedent that you could help us with where we are not in the process of enforcing an arbitrator's award, yet we are to take account of the facts found by an arbitrator?
No, Your Honor, I don't. Other than this court, under the de novo review, can examine the record, and the arbitrator's award is in the record, and all of the evidence in the record indicates that there's no evidence that Mr. Zellner intentionally viewed any of the images on the CD.
What comes to mind, and I may be off base, is that, of course, there's a statute regarding judicial notice, and there's a statute regarding judicial notice of adjudicative facts, but I don't know if that would apply in this kind of situation for one of the reasons that was just articulated by Justice Rogensack, that is, that's not really within our proceeding for which there is review here today.
Even if the court doesn't want to take judicial notice of the arbitrator's award, the court can still examine the deposition of the forensic expert in this case, which the circuit court ordered. And in that deposition, the expert testified that there's no evidence that Mr. Zellner intentionally accessed any of the images or the website on the CD.
I'm going to ask a question that will raise an eyebrow. Let's see, I'm going to look to see if any eyebrows are raised. And that is, why shouldn't we improvidently grant this case? In preparation for this case, I said to myself, the issue certified by the Court of Appeals, the first issue, the threshold issue in the analysis, is whether or not Zellner has standing. And yet that really wasn't addressed by the parties, even though that was the certified question. And it was addressed by one party with one paragraph and another party with two paragraphs, hardly what I would call a thorough analysis of a certified question, given that the briefs, you know, are pretty darn thick, and much of this is appendix. But one paragraph in reading 200 pages of materials is hardly assisting the court in the certified question of whether or not there's standing. So why shouldn't we improvidently grant this?
Your Honor, Mr. Zellner does have standing to bring the claim in this case. The open records law gives Mr. Zellner standing to challenge the release of any record that is related to the investigation of a disciplinary proceeding. Here, the record is part of an investigation of Mr. Zellner. So once he has standing under the open records law to bring his claim, he's entitled to make any arguments in support of that claim. The copyright exception argument is merely an argument of statutory construction. Mr. Zellner does not need standing to make an argument regarding statutory construction. In addition, Wisconsin case law instructs that standing must be construed liberally in Wisconsin. So he has standing to challenge the release of the records. The open records law provides him with that. It does not limit the defenses that he can raise to challenge the release of those records.
Let's assume he has standing. How does this case differ from Lenzmeyer?
Your Honor, this case is different than Lenzmeyer because in Lenzmeyer there was not a dispute about the veracity of the statements that were made. Lenzmeyer made the statements publicly in a classroom of students and, in fact, later admitted that he had made most of the remarks. In this case,
well, counsel, wasn't there an admission here?
Your Honor, there was an admission in terms of the blind Google search that was performed, but the images on the CD go far beyond the one Google search for blind. They contain various images and websites that there's no evidence were accessed by Mr. Zellner, and in fact, that was confirmed by an independent arbitrator.
Well, we're just looking at the one CD made in November 5th or 6th. That's what we're talking about. Is that what we're talking about here?
No, Your Honor. Actually, the search that was done in November, the Google search, that was presented at the board hearing, and the public has had access to that search.
When you say that search, you mean the November 5th, 2005 search?
The one in November, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That was an exhibit that was presented at the board hearing. The district printed off the actual Google search and gave exhibits at the board hearing. The papers sought access to that exhibit, and Mr. Zellner did not oppose the release of that exhibit. He took responsibility for that search and for his actions in that case.
So what is the test we use, the balancing test? What are we balancing here?
I think you need to look at the harm to Mr. Zellner's reputation in releasing a CD of 1,500 images that there's no evidence he actually accessed versus the public value in releasing that CD. And I would submit to this court that the CD and memorandum offer no public value. They're not indicative of the board's decision to terminate Mr. Zellner, nor are they indicative of Mr. Zellner's conduct. The only thing they really show is material that an expert recovered from a hard drive that had already been deleted.
Do you agree that the test isn't the harm to his reputation versus the public interest in having information available, but the public's interest regarding his reputational and privacy interests versus the public's interest in having the information?
I would agree that that's the standard that was enunciated in Lenzmeyer.
Okay, so explain to me how this advances the public's interest in his privacy or reputational interests.
Because what's happening to Mr. Zellner in this case could happen to all public employees in his situation. Public employees have to be concerned about the fact that when an employer chooses to discipline them regarding their conduct in the workplace, that that employer release accurate information regarding that investigation. So all public employees will be concerned if employers are allowed to create evidence that is misleading and then release it to the press without that employee having any opportunity to defend itself.
Well, doesn't the employee under the statute have the right to add a comment on the release? Say this wasn't in the public here, it wasn't in the a factor in the decision to release him, and that there's no showing that this was his material. I mean, you have a right to have a statement.
You do, Your Honor. However, the problem in this case is at the time that these records were presented to Mr. Zellner, the district was refusing to provide any information regarding these records. It would not tell the union who compiled the CD, how it was compiled, where the materials were found.
Counselor, but you've done the deposition of the person that did the investigation now, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's kind of old history. I'm more interested in whether the public's interest in Mr. Zellner's privacy is different because he was using a publicly owned computer rather than his own laptop that he might have brought to school on a Sunday night.
I would agree that his expectation of privacy is different because the conduct occurred in the workplace rather than in Mr. Zellner's home.
Well, it also occurred on a public computer.
Yes, it did.
And I get requests all the time for stuff off of my telephone here in court because it's a public telephone.
It did occur on the school's computer on non-work time. That's correct.
Does that make a difference?
Right.
It was work or non-work?
Right.
I think it does make a difference because the public has a heightened response, heightened idea of what to know that a teacher is doing on work time. So I think of all of the factors in this case, it weighs in favor of Mr. Zellner. But I think the more critical question is that the records are misleading, and that is what's damaging to Mr. Zellner's reputational interest as well as other public employees. And if I could back up to Justice Rogensack's question, it is important to understand what the history of this case is, because that goes to my third point today, that under 1936-10B, if the records were going to be released, they should not have been released until after the arbitration hearing. It wasn't until Mr. Zellner had access to the forensic expert and took his deposition that Mr. Zellner could have properly refuted the allegations the district was making against him. And it's sound public policy for this court to interpret that exception to mean that records should not be released when a grievance is filed until after the arbitration hearing.
Ms. Jonan, doesn't that run counter to Linsmeyer? Doesn't Linsmeyer basically say once you have gone through the disciplinary hearing and discipline has been decided on, the records can be released?
The Court of Appeals instructed that in Rock County, Your Honor. However, Rock County did not deal with this situation where the employer makes the decision to terminate an employee.
Yeah, you're right. It's Rock County, not Linsmeyer.
And then in Rock County, after Mr. Zellner had his hearing regarding the evidence against him, the employer continued to investigate. And it admitted at the circuit court that it continued to investigate because it planned to use the records in the arbitration hearing. So it's better public policy to interpret the statutory exception to mean that an investigation does not conclude until an arbitration hearing, because the reality is that employers do continue to investigate their employees when the employees challenge the disciplinary decision.
But, Counselor, wouldn't that prevent the public from knowing what's going on? I mean, this action has been in all the newspapers, and there certainly must be a lot of public interest about it. So if we put all the weight on letting this interpretation change from what was in Rock County by saying, well, this investigation doesn't really fall within the four squares of that case, still, the arbitration process isn't concluded because the award has never been enforced, correct?
Your Honor, that's correct. The arbitration process is not concluded, but at least if you postpone the release of records until an arbitration hearing, then you protect an employee's due process rights to examine that evidence, and the public gets the full story, not just the employer side. So I would submit to this court that it's better public policy that the public get the full story, the complete investigation, before it hits the front page news. It protects the public from getting half-truths, and it protects an employee's reputation from being damaged in the process process of an investigation.
What is it you don't know today that you are trying to delay the release of these records for?
I don't believe there's any further information that I can find out about these records today, but I think the key part is that at the time the district wanted to release the records, we didn't know any of this information. And in fact, we needed to file a motion to compel to get this information, and the district filed a motion to quash that motion to compel. So even in the circuit court, the district did not want to give Mr. Zellner any of this information needed to refute what was in these records.
But why should that be of concern to us? You're losing me a little bit on that argument.
Because the statute was amended in 2003 to put this exception, 1936-10B, and the intent was to codify Wozniacki and the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association case.
Okay.
And in the Milwaukee Teachers case, the concurrence strongly stressed an employee's due process rights to examine evidence against him. So interpreting this statutory exception to mean that when an employee challenges an employer's disciplinary decision, then the investigation is not concluded until the grievance is resolved or there's an arbitration hearing, because that would protect an employee's due process rights, which was critical to the court in the Milwaukee Teachers case.
Even if I agree with you, how is that going to compel us to overrule the trial court today?
This court can rule that the circuit court erred in ordering the release of the records before the employee had an arbitration hearing on those records.
Thank you.
Could you speak to the copyright here? Is there any dispute that these records are copyright?
There's no dispute, Your Honor, that these records contain copyrighted materials. Therefore, under the plain meaning of the open records law, the CD is not a record as defined by the law. The law defines a record to not include materials to which access is limited by copyright. Here, access is limited by copyright. So under the plain meaning of the statute, the journal does not have a right to the CD.
What do you mean access is limited by copyright? This is on the Internet?
It is on the Internet, yes, Your Honor.
Could anybody find this on the Internet?
That's a hard question for me to answer because we don't know where the images came from, but I assume so.
Well, then how is access limited?
Access is limited because it's the copyright holder that places the images on the Internet for someone to access. So only the copyright holder has the freedom to distribute those images. The district is not the copyright holder of these images, nor is the Milwaukee Journal. So their access to this material is limited. The material cannot be distributed freely without violating copyrighted laws.
Isn't that a question about whether this is a fair use or not? So even if I would agree with what you've said initially, don't we still have to decide whether this is a fair use of these materials?
You don't need to decide a fair use, Your Honor, because the statute, fair use only comes into play when you're talking about copyright infringement. And the statute does not say a custodian doesn't need to release records if it'll be liable for copyright infringement. It merely says that if access is limited by copyright, it isn't a public record.
And access, if it is fair use, is access limited by copyright?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Fair use means that you can only use the images for certain things. It doesn't mean you can distribute them at will.
So it's limited. The access is limited if there's fair use.
That's exactly right.
Let me take a look at the statute, because as I understand at least a difference between the two of you in interpreting the statute, and I'm, of course, referring to 1932, sub 2, the definition of record. Now, record does not include, the statute indicates, and it lists a number of things, drafts and preliminary computations and the like. And then it says it does not include materials to which access is limited by copyright, patent, or bequest. So we got to figure out what that means. It seems to me you are asserting that we should read that to mean records does not include copyrighted materials. Is that the way you're reading that?
Yes, Your Honor. That's my plain meaning of the statute argument.
But if that's what the legislature meant, why didn't they say that? Why didn't they say they say record does not include drafts? Okay. Notes? Okay. Copyrighted materials? Okay. That's not what they said. They said, records does not include drafts, notes, materials to which access is limited by copyright. Why did they use those words rather than what you're suggesting what they really meant, copyrighted materials, all copyrighted materials?
Well, that's an excellent question, Your Honor, and I did not find any legislative history on this other than what the journal submitted, that in the notes it talks about protecting proprietary information. And I would submit to this Court that that actually supports Mr. Zellner's arguments because this information is proprietary. And I would also submit that accepting the plain meaning of the statute, that in this case access is limited by copyright to these materials, you have a bright-line test that is very easy for records custodians to understand and administrate. If you change the exception to constitute copyright infringement and require records custodians to do a fair use analysis, that complicates the open records law and really forces records custodians to be experts in copyright law, which is a very technical area of the law. However, if there's just a blanket exception that they don't need to produce materials where access is limited by copyright, then you protect the government from liability, and you also ensure that people do not have access to something under the open records law that they wouldn't have access to under copyright law.
Well, why couldn't a list be made of everything on the CD that's copyrighted, and then the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel can just find it itself?
You could do that under the copyright exception, Your Honor, but then I would argue that the balancing test comes into play and that a list of websites should not be released to the public because the public would assume that Mr. Zellner accessed them when that is not the case. The district's expert testified and the district logs show that Mr. Zellner did not enter any of the websites. So if this is released to the public, they're going to assume that he did that, and that is not the case.
One of the cases cited by your opposing counsel is the Monroe case, M-U-N-R-O-E versus Pat Bratz, who was acting then as the administrator and not releasing records regarding a physician. And in that court decision written by Judge Ike, it was suggested, because we're dealing with the scores of the physician, and that the scores could be released with a caveat to whoever receives them that this is not necessarily indicative of the physician's actual performance skills or ability to treat whatever the problem the person may be seeking. Why can't a similar thing be employed here as employed in Monroe, or as referenced by the Chief Justice earlier, a statement accompanying or a caveat upon release as in Monroe?
Because this is not a simple case of test scores possibly being inaccurate, this is a very complicated situation. In order to understand the inaccuracy of the CD, you would need to read the board hearing transcript, the arbitration hearing transcript, the expert's deposition, and the arbitration award. And I would submit to this court that it isn't reasonable to assume that anyone who requests these records will do that analysis. Whereas on the contrary, if the records are released, then those images and websites will follow Mr. Zellner throughout his career, no matter what the facts actually are.
Is there any problem about releasing the memorandum?
We do have a problem with releasing the memorandum under the balancing test because the memorandum is fraught with inaccuracies. For example, the district accused Mr. Zellner of accessing various websites when the evidence shows he did not intentionally access any websites. In addition, it talks about Mr. Zellner visiting adult images on numerous occasions when its own expert testified that it only found two occasions of Google searches performed by Mr. Zellner. In addition, the district's own software that was monitoring Mr. Zellner's internet use was on Mr. Zellner's computer and the district's server, and it only found two dates of Google searches performed by Mr. Zellner, yet the memo is not limited to those two dates.
Why don't we just transcribe what you just said? Release the information with that caveat. Please be advised of the following statement made by counsel at oral argument on March 6, 2007.
I would like to do that, Your Honor. However, once this court deems those materials to be an open record, I see that my time has expired. Could I finish my answer?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. That the once they're deemed an open record, anyone can request these under the open records law. We don't even have a right to know who the requester is. So it isn't reasonable to assume that the public is going to read my statement or that the paper is going to print my statement. We don't have any control over that. Yes, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and this will follow Mr. Zellner throughout his career. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Jennifer Peterson of LaFollette Godfrey Kahn, representing the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Catherine Goodloe.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jennifer Peterson. I'm with the law firm of LaFollette, Godfrey, and Kahn. With me today is Robert Dreps, also of our firm, and the newspaper's general counsel, Paul Kreitzer. Your Honor, the Cedarbrook School District's decision to terminate Mr. Zellner's employment created no less than a firestorm in that community. And although we've heard today for 30 minutes Mr. Zellner's side of this story, the public is also interested in oversight of the district's conduct here. Mr. Zellner alleges that he was persecuted for his role as a union leader, and therefore it was inappropriate for the school district to terminate him for this limited conduct that he did on a Sunday night. The school district, in response to that, agreed to release two records in response to a request from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. One, a CD of images that it found on Mr. Zellner's computer, and two, a memorandum prepared by the school district's attorney about those images.
I have a question. First of all, opposing counsel seems to say, all right, sure, we think the records could be released, but not now. Why do you think that that is an inaccurate argument?
Your Honor, the not now argument is under 19.3610B. And I think the timing is important to understand the actual language of the statute. 19.3610B says that information relating to the current investigation of possible criminal offense or possible misconduct connected with employment by an employee prior to disposition of the investigation. And, Your Honor, to conclude, along with Mr. Zellner's interpretation of that statute, you would have to read out of this statute several words, including current investigation of possible misconduct. At the time that the school district looked at his computer, it was after his termination. Therefore, the school district had already concluded that he had engaged in misconduct. The only reason they were looking at his computer again was in preparation to defend itself from the grievance arbitration process. Therefore, there was no possible misconduct being investigated here. It was already concluded that he had engaged in misconduct and was terminated.
Can I just follow up? When opposing counsel indicated that this is much different than Lenzmeyer, as I read Lenzmeyer, basically, we look at the public policy. The public policy is openness. The opposing counsel seems to say, look, we have a reputation, the reputation of Mr. Zellner, and until this is completed, then that trumps the openness public policy of the statute. The argument there, that's why I asked you about 19.3610B, because unless I misinterpreted, they're saying, well, just wait a while, and then you'll have the whole story.
I agree with your interpretation of their reasoning, and I would say that the legislature drew the line in terms of when it's reasonable to provide that information to the public. They said the legislature made the decision, yes, wait a while, but only wait until disposition of the investigation.
What was the date of the public records request, if you recall?
The date of the public records request, I believe, was February 22nd, 2006.
About a year ago. If no one minds my asking, what's the current procedural posture of the appeal from the arbiter's award? Where is it? Is it pending trial? Have you had hearings on it?
Your Honor, we are not a party in that process. I can only tell you what I know from looking at the electronic docket of that case, which I did check today before we came here. And from what I can tell by looking at that electronic docket is that it's pending in the Ozaukee County Circuit Court, and there was a motion pending by the school district to basically vacate the arbitrator's award. It looks to me like that issue has been fully briefed, but again, I haven't studied the record, and we're not a party to that action.
Thank you.
But that raises an interesting issue, Justice Bradley, because in this case, Mr. Zellner says, don't release this record until after the arbitration hearing. Well, there's nothing new that Mr. Zellner would say after the arbitration hearing that he wouldn't have said at the time of the district that they've made this request for the record.
We've already had the arbitration hearing, I think he's saying, until after the arbitration issue now appealed has gone through the appellate process. That's kind of what I understand it to say. Because you've had an arbitration hearing. There's a three-day arbitration hearing before three arbitrators, right?
Yes, that was my understanding. Again, we weren't a party to that action either, and we only know what's been released to the public with respect to what happened at that arbitration. But from the public's perspective, the arbitration process has not disclosed much information at all about these requested records. So there's no reason to delay access to these records for the arbitration. We can read the arbitrator's award, which has been released, and it doesn't discuss these records that the newspaper requested.
Ms. Peterson, can we use the arbitration award to determine whether or not the material at issue is misleading and or damaging? Is that appropriate for us to do?
If my reading of the arbitrator's award is that whether these materials were misleading and or damaging was not before the arbitrator. And in fact, the trial court in this case considered that issue, and in the transcript said that there was no question that these records are what they are, meaning that they came from the Mr. Zellner's computer. And the fact that they were potentially misleading or damaging to his reputation, they took into consideration as part of the balancing test. And as the trial court found, that it was the overwhelming interest of the public in knowing about these records, so that there was oversight of both Mr. Zellner's conduct and the school district's behavior in this snowballing controversy.
Now, the trial court did order the release of these materials. Is that correct?
Yes.
But made no, as I understand what you're saying, made no specific finding as to whether or not these materials were misleading and or damaging?
As part of that transcript, he made a finding that these records are what they purport to be, meaning that he concluded these records are images from Mr. Zellner's computer. You'll see at the end of that hearing, Ms. Jonan made a point of making sure that the trial court clarified that because she wanted to be sure that there was no reporting in the newspaper or in the public generally that these records appear to be what Mr. Zellner looked at. And that's not what the trial court said. He said there's no dispute that these are records what they purport to be, meaning the images were from Mr. Zellner's computer.
Well, how could you ever prove that he looked at them unless you were there sitting with him?
I completely agree with you, Justice Rogenczak. And the point of the public's access to these records is to not only have oversight of this one public school teacher's conduct, which we've been focusing on here today, but the focus should also be on the public's ability to have oversight of the district's conduct. The public needs to know that it can hold accountable not only its public school teachers, but also its administrators and its elected school officials, who here ultimately did terminate this teacher. And these records are important because after the termination, Mr. Zellner claims that he was persecuted. And the district was continuing to prepare for its arbitration, and that's when it went and looked for these records. This is a snowballing controversy, which, as Justice Rogenczak referred to, has been all over the newspapers. And the public needs to know, was he railroaded? And only the content of these records will let the public decide for itself, and not take the spin from either side of this controversy, whether, in fact, the school district's decision was justified because this teacher should have been terminated for the content that was on his computer, or if, in fact, this was really innocent and he was being railroaded by this administration.
How many CDs are there?
Justice Prosser, from my understanding, having not had access to the records, I understand that there is one. I have not been aware that there's
Is that any. The one that the legislature has 1,500 images on it?
My understanding is yes.
All right. But you're not prepared to say that Mr. Zellner looked at all of those images?
Your Honor, I think I don't know what the memorandum says, and I don't know what the CD looks like. All I know is what I've been told from Mr. Zellner's counsel, who says that he didn't look at these images, and what we know from what's out there in the public. Otherwise, all we know is that this is stuff that was on his computer. And I think that's the important part here, is to know, for the public to know, what was on his computer at that time.
Is it a red herring to say that we don't oppose the release of these until after the lower court concludes this? Because what difference, as far as reputation, with which way, it's basically the open public access is what you're talking about. In other words, open records. Does it make a difference?
Does it make a difference? I'm sorry.
As far as if after they want, opposing counsel wanted us to wait until after the adjudication of the hearing in I think it's Ozaukee, I may be wrong, Ozaukee County.
Sure, Your Honor. Opposing counsel wants us to wait because they want to wait until all of this is over. They want to wait for any dispute relating to this controversy is over, so then they can hopefully, from their perspective, say, see, Mr. Zellner was reinstated. There was no basis to terminate him.
That would be then regardless the statement that the Chief Justice talks about that he possibly could put out, but that would be regardless of whether whatever the finding of the court is then, right? The records are out then.
Right. And the open records law has always required prompt access to records. And in construing Section 1936.10b, the prompt access to records should be considered so that this is construed as a narrow exception. Requiring 1936.10b for access to records to wait until after an arbitration hearing, after the entire arbitration process, after it's gone to the circuit court and been affirmed or not, creates delay and creates prolonged delay. And as the Court of Appeals concluded in Rock County, the delay should not be able to be caused by the employee by filing a grievance. The time of the disposition of the investigation should be at the time that the employer decides to impose discipline or not. Anything after that is not within the context of this statute.
Could I go back to these 1,500 images? If it were beyond dispute that there were 1,500 images and that Mr. Zellner looked at the 1,500 images, I think that would be a pretty compelling case to release 1,500 images. But if it cannot be established that he looked at more than one or two, I mean, it seems to me that that would be terribly damaging. I mean, don't you have to have a certain threshold before you release all of those?
Justice Prosser, I would ask you to consider that I represent the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and that the school district is the ultimate, made the initial decision in this case to release these records. And part of that is also requiring public oversight of the school district's decision to release these records. Your question suggests that perhaps this adds to the fact that maybe the school district was in fact railroading Mr. Zellner. We don't know the answer to that, but the content of these images will help us understand that. If these images are in fact crude and offensive versus something that you could see on in the supermarket on the shelf, I think that's going to be important for the public to know. The public will want to know, as parents of students in that school district, what was on his computer? Was it smart that the school district terminated him when they did? Or were, in fact, these images, 1,500 of them, whatever the number may be, were these actual innocent images on his computer? And therefore, we need to have better oversight of our administrative officials in the school district to make sure that they're not engaging in this type of inappropriate conduct with terminating our teachers.
But what does it mean to be on his computer? I mean, I suspect you have Google on your computer. I have Google on my computer. What does it mean exactly to be on the computer?
Your Honor, my understanding from what happened here, again, not being a party to this dispute at that issue, was that the school district hired a forensics expert to go in and look at his hard drive to see what was on his hard drive. And I think,
even though it had been erased.
I'm sorry?
Even though it had been erased, deleted?
I was not aware that it had actually been erased.
Images had been deleted, I think, but not from the hard drive.
Right. They could still be recovered, as we all know. Even emails can be deleted, and they're often recovered. They're still on your computer.
Okay. That's where they're on the hard drive. Okay.
Right. And I think the important thing is that there's no dispute that these images were on Mr. Zellner's hard drive. That's not what Mr. Zellner is saying is inaccurate or misleading about these images. He's saying, I may not have looked at all of these images. And the content of the images goes to the public's ability to oversee not only the conduct of their student, their teacher, but also the district. The district's decisions here are important. And as the Court of Appeals recently made clear in Croplin, that oversight of the entire disciplinary process is key for the public.
Ms. Peterson, let me follow through with Justice Prosser's question. I'm thinking about two decisions of this court, was Nikki and Milwaukee Teachers. Both of those decisions were buttressed, were based, if you will, on the idea of fundamental fairness. And there does seem to be something unfair if there can't be a link made between what's on this disk and what's referred to in the memo and what this particular individual teacher actually saw or looked at. How do you handle that? How do we ignore or put aside Wozniacki and Milwaukee Teachers?
Well, Justice Crooks, I don't think you need to put aside Wozniacki and Milwaukee Teachers. And I think that the important part is that there's not a huge valley here where these images are on one complete side and Mr. Zellner's conduct is way out in left field. These were images that were on Mr. Zellner's computer. And I'm not a computer expert, but you don't get pop-ups of this kind, what we think of this kind of adult material, without having engaged in other types of conduct on your computer that is inappropriate.
Do you know that as a matter of law?
I don't, Justice Bradley, as I would say, I don't know that as a matter of
because
law.
Because I got some pop-ups.
Aha!
Now we're going to get you. I was looking for the citation.
I, unfortunately, I don't have a citation for you.
Let me stop blushing. Just a minute.
To answer Justice Crooks' question, there is no complete divorce here between Mr. Zellner and his school computer. That's the important part here, is that this was a school computer. These were images that were found on his school computer that the district here decided to release in response to an open records request because they wanted to respond to his allegations that he was being terminated for something that he shouldn't have been terminated for. And the district, in preparation for this grievance arbitration, went and looked harder and said, okay, well, if you're going to say that you've been persecuted for 67 seconds of conduct, we found this other evidence, and we think this is just as important.
Now, if you win this case and the CD is released, do all these folks here have the right to go to the school district and ask for those CDs as public records?
I will give a caveat on your answer because I think the question of all these folks, I am sensitive to the fact that all of these folks include some students. And so I think the student issue would have to be addressed different from an adult question. But if the question is can another adult go to the school district and ask for a copy of
this? Another 18-year-old?
Yes. Anyone who's 18 or over, I think definitely can go to the school district and ask for a copy of the CD and memorandum. The open records law does not condition public access on the number of requesters who can get access to this.
Is there anything potentially unseemly about school district disseminating these kind of pictures?
I think that there is nothing unseemly about the school district providing this information to the public so it can have informed citizens about this very important controversy in Cedarburg. I think to completely answer your question about students and perhaps students in the high school who are under the age of 18, I think it may have a different answer to that question. The open records law does not suggest that minors have rights to access this type of information. And I would say that the actual public policy of the open records law suggests that we're providing the greatest possible information to the public to have an informed electorate, which would not include minors. But I think you could also show that under the open records law, there is nothing to say that a custodian could not consider the age of a minor in determining whether it is appropriate to release certain information to a minor.
If the school district received a request from Hong Kong for a copy of the CD, would they be obligated to produce it?
In response to a written request?
Yeah.
I don't see why not.
Upon payment of all the fees.
Right.
Mailing, maybe.
But would
burning a CD.
Would that be a cost?
Would that be a cost?
I mean, at cost, not profit. We don't want the school district to profit from
this. Certainly the school district has not suggested that it is going to profit from fulfilling its obligations under the open records law in any way. And I think the Chief Justice is correct that they could charge the cost of mailing if the request, in fact, came from Hong Kong.
But if this was on the Internet, that listen, you can get 1,500 images from the school district at cost, and 10,000 requests came in, wouldn't that implicate the copyright?
No, Your Honor, it would not, because the fair use analysis would take that into consideration. And as we said in our brief, it doesn't matter how many requests you would get for this type of information, because it would not have an impact on the market for these images. We don't know what these images are, but we've been told from Mr. Zellner's attorney that these are pop-up images that have been freely disseminated on the Internet, and that these images were thrust upon his computer and that he did not get to them intentionally. That suggests under the open records law that the copyright holder wants wide and free dissemination of these images. So even under your hypothetical, even if there were 10,000 requesters who wanted these images, that would not damage the market for these images on the Internet. And in fact, the copyright holder, by this conduct, suggests that it wants these images distributed freely.
I'm a person that didn't want my daughters to wear two-piece bathing suits, so I'm a little conservative in this area. Yet, the reason I say that is I ask, what place, if any, does that kind of concern play in our legal analysis? And let me tell you what that kind of a concern is. You don't have, from my belief, you don't have to worry about all of the students at the school or in the county making requests and burdening the staff for requests. All you need is one 18-year-old who gets a copy, and within nanoseconds, that's going to be available, you know, around and around and around. So,
you know. YouTube or? No, YouTube.
Me too, you too. So, you know, I swallow a little bit about that. You know, let's say this is hardcore porn. Let's say. And, you know, 1,500 in images, and, you know, that causes me to pause as a parent, as a former teacher, as a citizen of the state. But what about as a justice of the Supreme Court? What part does that pausing, that concern, that anticipated reality play in my legal analysis?
Your Honor, I think that under the open records law, that concern has its effect, as we discussed, about access of these images. But I think in this case, your concern should not be at the heart of this case, and it should not even be an overwhelming part of the balancing test, because your concern is no different about these images versus thousands of other images that any other 18-year-old could go to the Internet and do the same thing with. So I see no difference between your concern, specifically related to these images, between any other images that an 18-year-old could go and find on the Internet and distribute freely in a nanosecond to its friends. And so I think when we're talking about access under the Open Records Law, that certainly is not an overwhelming public interest that should overwhelm the public's right of oversight under the Open Records Law, and particularly the balancing test.
Counsel, in looking at the balancing test, I'm also thinking eventually, and my colleagues seem to be concerned about this, that these images, that whatever is on the CD and the memo will eventually be released. Is there any argument between counsel and yourself on that? I gathered that what they were saying, and the amicus also says, this is the investigative stage. Let's wait till it's over, then it can be released. Your argument is that under the Open Records Law, it should be released now, because that's what it commands, that's what the legislation is there for, to have openness to the public. Have I misread this argument? Have I misread what's being said here between you and opposing counsel?
No, I think that you have an accurate description of our arguments.
So when my colleagues say, well, what's there, and there's 1,500 images, whatever is there is going to eventually get to the public. Is that correct?
My understanding of Mr. Zellner's argument is that these images should never be released, but only under the balancing test does he make that argument.
Okay, only under the balancing test. All right, thank you.
Your Honors, one more point that we spent a lot of time talking about, the language of Section 1936.10b, and for the same reasons I would encourage the Court to look closely at the language of the copyright phrase in 19.32 sub 2. As the Court noted, the actual phrase is materials to which access is limited by copyright, patent, or bequest. And to interpret this phrase in the way that Mr. Zellner asks you to, completely rewrites this phrase, because he asks you to interpret this to include any copyrighted material. And that would eviscerate the public's right of access under the Open Records Law. But another important part is that Mr. Zellner does not have standing to raise this copyright issue, because this is a case that came before the Court pursuant to 19.356. That's the procedural posture of this case, and it was a procedure that the legislature adopted in 2003 to codify and limit the Wozniacki line of cases which we've discussed here today. Those cases were to allow the subject of a record to raise personal, privacy, and reputational interests, the public's aspect of those interests, that the custodian of the records may not have considered. And I would encourage this Court to conclude that Mr. Zellner does not have standing to raise the copyright issue, because a 19.356 action should be limited to those types of interests for raising your personal, reputational, and privacy interests. In addition, 19.32 sub 2, if the Court construes that language, needs to be construed narrowly, because it is an exception to public access. Construing it broadly would eviscerate the public's right of access under the Open Records Law, because the definition of record, something in tangible form, is just about the same thing that it is the threshold letter to get copyright protection. Copyright is automatic. Therefore, to understand how material to which access is limited by copyright, one would not necessarily have to go to federal copyright law, because that is only how we can understand how access is limited to material under copyright law. And in this case, this is a fair use of these images under the fair use analysis under federal copyright law. So therefore, this is not an infringement. And I think the balancing of the four factors under the fair use analysis makes clear that this is a fair use.
We're importing, aren't we, then, use of the documents into our open records analysis? And I thought that was an anathema to open records. In other words, I don't care what you're using them for. That's not part of the equation in the analysis of the custodian as to whether to release them.
Your Honor, under the fair use analysis, the use to be examined is the use by the custodian here, not the use of the requester. So here, the fair use analysis looks at what use is the custodian, who is the one making the copy, going to be using this for. It does not look at what is the recipient under the Open Records Law using the record for. And here, the use is for the school district to respond to a public records law request. And so that's the correct angle of looking at fair use, not from the side of the requester. Your Honors, 20 years ago in Newspapers, Inc. versus Showers, this Court stated, an informed public is essential to a representative government, and emphasized that if we are to have an informed public, the media must serve as the eyes and the ears of the public. Public access to the CD and memorandum in this case will allow my client, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, to be the eyes and the ears and inform the public of the content at the heart of this significant controversy between the teachers in Cedarburg and the Cedarburg School District Administration. Only the content will allow the public to judge for itself and not accept the spin provided by either side to this controversy, the rightness or wrongness of Mr. Zellner's conduct and the allegations of persecution and the district's multiple responses. No further questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Jonan, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Your Honor, I would like to clarify our position based on Justice Wilcox's question that we are arguing that the CD is not subject to release at all because it is protected by copyright and that the records are not subject to release under the balancing test. However, if the Court rejects those arguments, then it is our position that the records should not have been released until after the arbitration hearing under 1936-10B.
Thank you, counsel. That's what I... Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. In answer, Justice Bradley, to your concern about students getting this material, and Justice Prossy, your concern about this CD being on YouTube is exactly why these records should not be released. And that does go to the balancing test, because you can weigh the public interest in non-disclosure in this case versus the public's right to know. And we submit that our concern regarding this release is exactly apparent in Ms. Peterson's argument. She stated to this Court, well, they were on his computer, so he must have looked at them. That is what the public is going to assume when that is not the case. The public has all the information it needs in this case to evaluate Mr. Zellner's conduct. The district's own experts stated that Mr. Zellner only performed 2 Google searches, one for the word blonde, which the public already has access to, and another in May of 2005, which the expert testified on page 57 of his deposition that it is not even on the CD. So the only 2 searches that Mr. Zellner performed, the CD does not provide any information. And in fact, even if you assume that Mr. Zellner accessed these images, the public doesn't need the exact images to evaluate Mr. Zellner's conduct. It's enough for the public to know that this is the accusation against Mr. Zellner, and these are the facts in support or to refute that allegation. You don't need the exact pictures to evaluate Mr. Zellner's conduct in this case. We submit that the exact pictures are too damaging to Mr. Zellner's reputation to be released because, as the justices have pointed out, once they're a public record, anyone can get them, and it will spread through the high school like wildfire. Mr. Zellner teaches high school. Some of his students are 18, and they will have access to this material.
The pictures aren't hardcore porn, and aren't they relevant to and even if they are, I don't know, maybe they will be, relevant to monitoring the conduct of the district? I mean, we're not just talking about Zellner here. We're talking about the district.
Yes, Your Honor.
A bunch of, you know, Linus and, who's the guy with Linus? Lucy. Linus and Lucy. Benign sort of pictures.
Yes, Your Honor. The problem is that the district's misconduct in this case is not apparent from the records themselves. In order to understand the employer's action in this case, you would have to examine other evidence, such as the district's expert deposition, the arbitration hearing transcripts, and the arbitration award. So just releasing a CD of 1,500 adult images tells the public nothing other than what's contained on Mr. Zellner's hard drive, which is probably similar to material that's contained on any one of our computers. Because as a computer expert testified, you do get these type of pop-ups even if you don't go to adult material sites. Because pop-ups, the purpose of them is to place material on your computer without the user knowing that it's there, so that it will continue to pop up and continue to be advertised and let the user know that if they want to visit these type of sites, they can.
If they're pop-ups, Counselor, isn't that apparent from the image?
The district's expert testified that it isn't apparent from the image retrieved if it came from a pop-up or not. All the expert can testify is that it's there. Now, in other cases, as in this case, the expert can show that there was an intentional search done. And he did testify that Mr. Zellner did perform two intentional searches. But to the other material, he couldn't distinguish whether it was a pop-up or not unless it's apparent from the exact image itself.
Thank you.
We submit that the public has very little to gain from the release of this CD, while Mr. Zellner and public employees have much to lose. In addition,
should anything be released at all, in your view?
Yes, Your Honor. I think if the searches performed by Mr. Zellner, which he accepted responsibility for, that was the Google search with the word blonde, those have been produced to the public. Mr. Zellner did not dispute the release of that information. We also did not dispute the hearing transcript from the board hearing. We've also produced the arbitration transcript with only Mr. Zellner's medical information and the student's identities protected. And we also have released the arbitrator's award. So the public has more than sufficient information to evaluate the controversy in this case. In addition, as Justice Prosser was concerned about earlier, once this CD is a public record, I see that my time has expired.
Finish your sentence, please.
If it is widely disseminated, that does affect its market value, which is a factor in the fair use test.
Thank you very much, Ms. Jolman, and thank you, Ms. Peterson, for your arguments today on yet another open record request involving public employees. We appreciate your arguments. That concludes our hearing in 06 AP 1143 AC, Robert Zellner versus Cedarburg School District. The court is in recess until tomorrow morning to hear oral arguments, and we'll meet in the conference room at 3:10. Thank you. We are in recess.